No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Alrighty, welcome back to another Wisco Fanatics Wednesday. Today we have a handful of Milwaukee Brewers games to discuss, as well as previewing the Wisconsin Badgers football game against USC. Also today, before we get to the Badgers football team, we are also going to talk our predictions for the Milwaukee Brewers playoff roster, which could start as early as next Tuesday. So we might have a playoff game to discuss next week. And then today, I am also going to go through the differences of the 2024 Milwaukee Brewers compared to the 2023, the 2021, and the 2018 Brewers to kind of alleviate some of the tension that there is among Brewers fans of, oh my God, they're going to be a one and done again. This team's different, and I'm going to tell you how. So let's get into it.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatics Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
All right, so we've had 6 Milwaukee Brewer games over the last week. So, Jake, hit me with your power pair and underrated performer for the last 6 games.
Yes. So, for my power position player, I went with none other than William Contreras. 353 average, a 450 on base percentage, 529 slug, and a 979 OPS. So, those are very good slash numbers. 6 of 17 over the last week, 2 runs, a home run, 2 RBIs, 3 walks, and only 6 strikeouts. So, pretty decent week for him. Freddy Peralta was my power position pitcher. 5 innings pitch, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 1 home run, 2 walks, and 9 Ks. If I have to explain to my daughter when she grows up, Dad, how good was Freddy Peralta? This is the kind of game that I would talk about. 5 innings pitch, he gave up 1 earned run, and it was a solo shot. 2 walks and 9 Ks. He had 17 at-bats for some this last week. That's a 118 on base opponent batting average, excuse me. So, I mean, that's very good. And he is 7 strikeouts away on the year from 200 Ks again. So, for a guy who was struggling, he's so close. For a guy who was struggling and not getting as many strikeouts for a couple starts there in a row to still get to somewhere around 200 K, that just speaks to the kind of talent that he is, in my opinion. Then my underrated performer, I went with Aaron Ashby. I don't know how this guy can continue to be underrated, but there are some Brewers fans, I think, that still need to get on deck, still thinking about the old Aaron Ashby. 2 1/3 innings pitch, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. So he had 7 at-bats, 7 outs, 2 1/3 is 7 outs. 6 of his 7 outs were strikeouts. Damn. That's ridiculous. He had a 143 opponent batting average against him. So very good week for Aaron Ashby as well.
Yeah, love that. And hopefully Freddy Peralta makes another start. He can rack up those 7 Ks real quick and then yank them.
Yeah, get them out of there.
Yep. 7 Ks, you're done. Yep. All right, so for me, I went with Rhys Hoskins as my power position player. He was 5 for 16 over the last week. That's a 333 batting average. Also drew 3 walks, and 3 out of his 5 hits were for extra bases. He drove in 5 runs and then scored 4 himself. My power pitcher, I went with Yoel Piamps. He made 3 appearances, pitched 3 innings, only gave up 2 hits and a walk, and 3 strikeouts. As we talk about these games, we'll talk about how I'm thinking about Yoel Piamps going into the playoffs. For my underrated performer, I went with Garrett Mitchell. Now, in the last week, he's 4 for 15 with a 267 batting average. Nothing crazy, but 2 of his 4 hits are home runs in the last week. And he also had the opposite field single during the Brewers' big comeback, which we'll talk about in depth. But looking at him over the last month, going back to August 24th, He's batting 304, 368, 712 with a 1079 OPS. Those are brilliant numbers.
Wow.
Over the last month.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to last Thursday. Sorry. What is last Wednesday? I was right the first time. And go back to the Phillies game, the series finale.
Yeah. So for anybody who joined us last week, Tyler with a great idea to start the show by watching the A's beat the Cubs, right? So we can confirm that we were division champs. So that was a great way to start last week's episode. The team obviously saw that they were division champs, but they talked about it and they said, we do not want to celebrate tonight after a loss. And it was a hard-fought win for these guys. That was a playoff-type game, playoff-type atmosphere. Freddie Peralta was on the bump for this one. This is where he started, and he became the position power position player for pitcher for me. I already went over his stats. His five innings, two hits, two walks in 9 Ks on a one earned run to give up a home run. I believe it was to Nick Castellano, right? If I remember,
I didn't write down who it was, but I think it was Castellanos. Yeah,
I think it was Castellanos. But then later in this game, sixth inning. Yeah. Reese Hoskins unloads on a baseball, getting his 25th home run of the year, 74th RBI, and ties this ball game. And it just confirms what we've been talking about for months and months and months, as people are complaining about a stat that doesn't matter anymore. Batting average doesn't matter anymore.
It's one piece out of a 50-piece puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many stats in baseball, right? You know, you could talk about slugging percentage. You could talk about, you know, exit velocity. I mean, there's a number of things that
And then you can get into certain situations with all those same numbers. Like,
So, I mean, you could really break it down if you really want to. And we've been talking for months about how Reese Hoskins is going to be massive for the Brewers going into the playoffs with his leadership and his ability to hit in big-time moments. And this last week, I'm sorry, it just confirmed that Tyler and I know no sports. It just is what it is. He had a big time hit. The bullpen, wanted to mention that real quick, did fantastic after Peralta gave up the one earned run. They gave up two hits and had one walk combined for the rest of the game. That's Ross, Koenig, McGill, and obviously Devin Williams, who got the win in this one, not the save, his first win of the year. But then we get to a situation where Jackson Chourio gets on base with a leadoff triple, and you're just like, yo, that kid was moving, man. He was just zooming around those base pads. And, you know, fast forward, we get to a situation where Jake Bauer is off the bat, right? And, you know, everybody's kind of holding their breath a little bit because people have had bad thoughts about Jake Bauer this year, especially at the plate. And he swings at the first pitch and wins the game, right? So I actually found something that I wanted to talk about with Jake Bauer. I agree, Michael. So Jake Bauer, this is after the Phillies game, okay? These are not updated to today. This is after the Phillies game. Jake Bauer's 2024 slash line of 196, 302, and 358 absolutely doesn't care when the game is on the line. That's what somebody said, right? And then a guy replied to him and absolutely bodied him. Two outs, runners in scoring position. He has a 314 batting average, 385 on base percentage, a 714 slug, and a 1099 OPS. That's two outs, runners in scoring position. And then Leighton Close, a 318 batting average.
Damn.
455 on base percentage.
Damn.
455 slug and a 909 OPS. So maybe we need to start having a discussion that maybe this team is just clutch.
Wow.
Maybe they know how to put it on the bat and actually use all of the field, use their power, get back to their instincts. And you know what? Late clutch situations, Jake Bauer has been just as good as Reese Hoskins, and nobody's been talking about it.
Wow, love that. Justin said he's not a baseball guy, but he came to support. Justin, I appreciate it. Justin has been checking out our Packers shows very much lately. He even got to see the whole thing live yesterday.
Hey, we'll make you a baseball guy.
We could make you a baseball guy, but we'll be talking about college football later. Mm-hmm. And Jake and I started discussing our plans for what we're going to do for the Bucks season primer and for Badgers basketball. So that's also coming up.
Uh-huh.
But like you said, on the night that the Brewers clinched, they buckled down to win a pitcher's duel against one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. And not only that, they prevented the Phillies from clinching themselves.
Yeah.
Took the Phillies three more days until they clinched their division.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie Peralta was very good against a good offense. He did only go the five innings pitch, but only allowed two hits while striking out nine. His velocity, spin, and break were all normal. He was just commanding his stuff really well, which is a really encouraging thing to see as we get really close to the playoffs. Also, you mentioned all the bullpen stats. They also struck out seven. So looking at the Brewers pitching staff as a whole in the nine-inning game, only gave up four hits and three walks, one run, and struck out the Phillies 16 times.
Yeah, dude.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
So that was really encouraging to see again as we near the playoffs. Now, before we dive into this, I'm going to preface this Diamondback series by saying something that people should be thinking, but apparently aren't. This Diamondback series brought up way too much, oh, I hope we don't play this team in the playoffs. They're going to sweep us again. Or, oh, the Brewers aren't going to, they're going to be one and done. Adanacio is just satisfied with making the playoffs. Like, this team was supposed to win 79 and a half games. Yes, we are satisfied with making the playoffs because we weren't supposed to.
Not this year.
We weren't supposed to win 90 games this year. They got five games to go yet.
Yeah.
We have five games to go, and they're already at 90 wins. They are already 10 and a half wins past where they were supposed to be. So, yes, we are satisfied with making the playoffs this year. And anything else that happens is gravy from this point on. But this Diamondback series, the Brewers had taken six of the previous nine, including two in San Francisco, two in Arizona, and two of three from the Phillies, who hadn't clinched their own division yet.
Yeah.
Three consecutive series wins. They took two or three days for people to completely jump ship off the bandwagon. After 150 games, it took 3 days for people to be like, nope, this team's one and done. Now, this is the thing. Because, yes, we'd have liked to see them, you know, challenging for one of the top two seeds. But here's the thing. After Wednesday, they were still three games back of the second seed. And they aren't still technically eliminated from it yet, but they need to, like, win out and have one of the other teams lose out. But the thing is, they were three games behind both the Phillies and the Dodgers for one of the top two seeds. Both of them hold tiebreakers over the Brewers, so the Brewers were more like four games behind because they would have needed to be one game ahead, not with the same record, because the same record, they would have still gotten the three seed. So to make that up within 10 games, I think is a little unrealistic to expect that. With how good those teams obviously are, they are the two best teams in the National League. So I'm not saying the Brewers should necessarily settle for what they are, but if we are being realistic, even us as the optimistic, if we're being realistic, expecting to make up four games against the Phillies or Dodgers out of 10 games to go, I think is a little unrealistic. So if we're being realistic, the Brewers were probably still destined for the three seed, barring something insane, which again, if you're playing like the odds numbers, I don't know the exact odds, but if you're telling me that 95% of the time the Brewers are going to end up as the three seed anyways, I'd rather focus on having guys rested, healthy, you know, getting guys days off who are dealing with soreness and tightness and, you know, whatever, and focus on being fresh and ready for the playoffs.
Okay, so I'm going to jump in right now.
Yep.
I'm going to talk about one specific point that you wanted to talk about, and that was, oh, my God, the Brewers are going to get swept against the Diamondbacks in the playoffs. I got a little news for you. The third best record in the National League right now is the Padres. They're on fire. They're only two games back of, and they could still win their division.
They could.
Guess who the Diamondbacks play the last series of the year? Guess who's going to be playing really, really hard? Guess who the Braves play? The Royals. The Royals are still playing tough too. But if the Diamondbacks aren't careful, because they lost last night and the Braves won last night, and right now I believe the Mets and Braves is still postponed. I saw it was earlier before we started the show. If the Diamondbacks aren't careful, they're going to get jumped by the Braves. And you know, I'm not saying that I'm running from the Diamondbacks, but I'd rather have the Braves and the Mets. Now, if we have the Mets and the Mets play three games against us to end the regular season, that's the last series of the year, and then we play them right away in the playoffs, just keep them in Milwaukee. Why would you fly back? That makes no sense.
Right.
Just keep them there, put them in the haunted hotel, make them have some nightmares, and then they got to go face our nightmare lineup where we're taking 100 pitches every at-bat. So that's just my two cents on it, is that the Diamondbacks didn't lock anything up. So why is anybody just concluding that that's who we're going to play? They got to play
Because they beat us with a bunch of our starters out.
What was that?
Because they beat us with a bunch of our starters out.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what to tell people anymore when they complain about that stuff. Like, do you not understand what they're – like, we're trying to get healthy.
Yeah.
We're trying to give guys rest because we're about to start our second season. That's what the playoffs really is. In every sport, they call it the second season. So once you clinch and you start your second season, it's go time. There's nothing holding you back anymore because now you're going for the gusto, right? So to get your guys healthy and a little bit of rest, get their legs feeling better, arms feeling better, back, whatever it is in the situation, maybe get your head right. Maybe that's what was wrong with some people. Maybe give them a little bit of rest. That could be a good thing that can go a long way. And they did get back-to-back wins, you know, last game against the Diamondbacks and then last night. So, I mean, for people to just jump ship after a couple of days is just ridiculous to me.
Michael said the Padres are the only team to make him nervous.
They're on fire, dude.
They've been pretty consistently on fire since the second half started.
Yeah, Dylan Cease is a problem, bro.
Yeah. All right, so game one of the Diamondback series, this was day 10 of 13 straight games. So, again, we're talking about rest and recovery. They're playing 13 straight games after clinching the division. So they're in the midst of that. So they're towards the tail end of it. Justin said going from a caterpillar to a butterfly. So the Brewers this game were resting Willy Adames and they were rotating some guys in. In doing so, they had 15 strikeouts, still fewer than they got against the Phillies the night before. Aaron Ashby did get back on track in this game. He allowed an inherited runner to score on a sac fly, so it was on an out. Hobie Milner did a good job, retired six straight across two innings. Tobias Myers, not his best. He had an error that drove up his pitch count, not necessarily a bad start, just kind of a short one, and that's a trend that will continue as we talk about these games. So, Jake, what's it up to you from game one?
Yeah, so the Hangover Crew, that's the first thing I wrote down, is the Hangover Crew struck today. Only had two guys and runners in scoring position. They were 0-for-2 in those situations. Mitchell hit a home run, his seventh of the year, got 19 RBIs. Obviously a solo shot. The Brewers lost this one 5-1. But, yeah, I was really just kind of watching the rotation and how they were when I found out that Willy Adames was out, I should say, I was just kind of watching to see who was all going to be playing, how they were going to rotate, how they were going to handle the next few games. That's really what was on my mind. I was just like, listen, they're not sending it in or, you know, mailing in the rest of the season. But, you know, if they take a day or two, it took them three, take a day or two or three, and, you know, you get right for the playoffs, that's all I care about, honestly. So that was really all I wrote down for this one was the Hangover Crew struck.
And I'll say this. If the Brewers, because all of the teams playing in the playoffs are playoff teams, shocking. If the Brewers do manage to lose their first round playoff series, that doesn't mean that they should have been pushing guys at the end of the season. That doesn't that would not prove anything.
Right.
That they should have changed anything. It's like talking when we talk about the Packers and about playing in the preseason. Like there's nothing that strongly correlates between playing in the preseason and playing in February. Like those things are not mutually exclusive. Okay. Game two, I wrote down literally two things. The Brewers ended up losing this one 7-4. The second inning against Colin Ray was stupid. A bunch of soft contact hits, like guys just like putting the bat in the path of the ball. And it's like, oh, that's a single? Cool. Cool. 68-mile-an-hour exit velocity single? Cool. Cool. So it's like, okay, yep, well, this was stupid. I will say in the bottom of the fifth inning, it was really encouraging to see Jackson Chourio get an infield single after twisting his ankle going for a ball that was hit to the wall in left field.
Yep.
And then it led to back-to-back home runs. So that was cool. The Brewers scored three more runs with two outs, three home runs in the inning. They made it a 4-4 game. Made this game exciting. Did end up losing overall. But still, game two of the Diamondback series was exciting for most part.
Yeah, I wrote down that they fought back after being down 4-0, showed the power, showed the clutch gene, showed the grit that we've all come to know and love from this Milwaukee Brewers team in 2024. Also, shout out to Chourio, 21st steal in the year, and Bryce Terang, number 46. So he just keeps ringing up a higher career high every steal that he gets. So hopefully he can get to 50.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. Game three. This game was another one where the Brewers are prioritizing health and rest.
Yeah.
William Contreras and Jackson Chourio both had the day off. This was game 12 out of 13 in a row. Hobie Milner had back-to-back good outings. I'm looking at the Brewers pitching staff as a whole. Six walks is too many, and then three to the top two batters. So the top two in the order both had three walks apiece. And then looking at the Diamondbacks, they're the top-scoring team overall and the top-scoring team in Major League Baseball in the first inning of games. So that's what they do. They jump out the leads, and then they score more. So honestly, I didn't really have a ton to take away from that game either. It's really just – it's prioritizing the health and the rest.
Yeah. what's up, Dan? How you doing? Yeah, it was just – this one was tough to watch. I won't lie to you. Losing 5-0, striking out 13 times. Just another game, like you said, that they're prioritizing health, trying new guys. This was the day that they let go of my boy, Enoli Cannoli. And then he signed with the Cubs, which really sucks.
I don't know either.
But I do have an idea, but I'm not going to say it. it is what it is.
Okay. Michael asked a question. I'm sure you'll get to it, but as you know, I'll have to leave for work. Curious as to who your three starting pitchers are for the playoffs: Peralta, Savali, then Myers, Ray, Montas. You want to give a three, or do you want to try to say three at the same time and see where we differ, or do you want to go first, or you want me to go first?
I mean, we both have Peralta.
Yes, Peralta is number one.
We both have Myers.
I would put Myers third.
I knew we both had him.
Yep.
Now, the one that I don't know who you have is, but I have, is Montas.
I would put Montas second as well.
Hey, look at us,
I would do Peralta, Montas, and Myers would be my three starters.
I like it.
And here's the thing with Savali and Ray. I would say you can take Tobias Myers and you could put, say, DL Hall with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Myers gets into any trouble around that 70 to 75 pitch mark like he had during the season, you pull him immediately. Mm-hmm. There's no trying to get extra outs out of starters in the playoffs, which we'll talk about this when we get to the playoff roster predictions. So we'll get to that. Game four of the series was the exciting comeback. The Brewers were down 8-0 at one point, and the tears were flowing.
Oh, my gosh.
On social media. Flowing, bro. Like, Lake Michigan damn near flooded into Lake Winnebago with the tears of Brewers fans.
Dude, they were flowing in the stadium, too. They were booing the team.
Bro, Day 13, 13 straight games, including six on the road. And this is – holy hell, dude. Get a grip. Pressure – and I'm gonna say a Craig Counsell quote right now. People might not like it, but pressure is a privilege. And when you can't handle pressure and you show it in this fashion, you show that you are not prepared to handle any sort of pressure.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be straight up with you. If that's how you're going to react, I do not want to talk to you during the playoffs.
Oh, man.
If you can't handle pressure, do not watch. I am so serious. If your first reaction is to start crying that nothing can be done because they've lost a couple games in a series and are losing a game that means nothing, really doesn't. Before we are five games away from the playoffs, or six games away from the playoffs, it's five as of now, but after this game, six games away from the playoffs, and people are freaking out, get a grip. You have 6 days. 6 days to get a grip. Now, this game, Frankie Montas did have a short start. He was also only pulled after 68 pitches. So this is, again, the Brewers shortening everyone. They are prioritizing rest and recovery for everyone, including the starting pitchers, especially the starting pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
The bullpen picked him up, which was really good to see. Mm-hmm. We did have the pretty ballsy base running by Joey Ortiz in the bottom of the sixth, running with his head down, running through the stop sign. But it worked, and I don't think he even saw the stop sign. I think he was just running with his head down because there was two outs. So I don't think it was like, oh, yeah, well, there, nobody even listens to Jason Lane. Like, it's not anything like that. He was running with his head down, running hard because there was two outs.
Right.
So, also, it's good to see Yoel Piamps, and I mentioned this as my power pitcher. It's good to see Yoel Piamps heading into the playoffs with momentum. Now, looking at this game, I'm looking at last week. Last week, the Brewers were down 5-0 in a game after three innings. They came back, and then they ended up losing in extra innings in Arizona. Mm-hmm. This week, they're down 8-0 after 2.5 innings and came back to win 10-9. And here's the thing. They did this by chipping away.
Mm-hmm.
One run in the third, two runs in the fourth, one run in the sixth, two runs in the seventh, three runs in the eighth, all with no home runs.
Yeah, that's what the most impressive part for me is no home runs.
No home runs. Yeah, Michael's Hobie's been good his last couple outings as well. And the Diamondbacks, they could sense the Brewers were coming back because they put in Corbin Carroll and Christian Walker in the eighth inning to help their defense.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the bottom of the eighth inning, the Brewers, the three runs that they scored came with two outs, four hits and a walk. Out of those hits in the eighth inning, which they had a Jackson Churio walk, a Blake Perkins single, a Garrett Mitchell single, Rhys Hoskins had a single. Yeah, yep. Rhys Hoskins had a single. Willie Adames had a double. And then Jake Bowers had a single on the tapper in the infield. So looking at those at-bats, four of those hits and the Jackson Churio walk all had two strikes on them. So the Diamondbacks had the Brewers down to their last strike in the eighth inning five times. And the Brewers still came through and kept the line moving.
Holy fuck.
I don't care what you think. I don't care what you think. There is nothing that says to me that the Brewers have no chance. There's nothing that tells me that this Brewers team doesn't have a chance to do something in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you numbers yet, too, after we predict the roster. I'm going to give you the numbers, too. But looking at the way this team wins games, you can't tell me that there's not a difference between this year's team and the previous, you know, staff, the previous leaders' teams. This team is different. They're built different.
I mean, we talked about it last week. We brought up a stat that was tweeted out by our friend of the show, Stephen Watson. The Brewers have the best record in baseball when they don't hit a home run. Now, again, they're under 500, but they're the best at that statistical category. Mm-hmm. Every other team is, like, really freaking bad, and the Brewers are, like, barely under 500. So it's like, dude, they can win a game any single way. They can win a pitching matchup. We saw it against the Phillies, one of the best teams in baseball all season long. They can win a game coming back from down 8-0. They can win shootouts. They can win anything, any kind of way. No home runs. They scored 10 runs without a home run, dude.
That's crazy, dude.
That is literally unheard of, in my opinion. Eight players with RBIs, 9 for 18 runners in scoring position. I wrote down that the fans were booing. I think it's a little ridiculous, but it kind of woke the team up, in my opinion, where they were like, oh, okay, you guys want a show today? You guys want to show today? You guys want to win? Oh, okay. Let's just go win. Let's just score 10 runs. We don't even need to hit it over the wall. Let's get some good APs, you know? And then they just scratch across 10 runs. Unbelievable. Now, the one thing I wanted to talk about, Murphy was talking about it. Sorry, I couldn't read my handwriting for a second. It's very chicken scratchy. He was talking about maybe Montas tipping his pitches. What's your thought on that?
I think they've talked about that a little bit. Yeah. I don't know. It's got to be something with his release point or something like that.
Or the way he holds his glove or something. I've seen stuff like that.
It's got to be something like that. But it's got to be something subtle that hopefully between Montas, the catchers, Chris Hook, and Pat Murphy that they can figure out.
Yeah. Because if we're going to make him our second pitcher, because I talked last week and I said that, you know, he's not afraid of any moment. You could see when he's up there. He's just like, I don't care who's standing up there with a baseball bat. I'm going to throw this shit at you. So yeah. Good luck. And that's what I love about Frankie Montas. So hopefully, like you said, they could figure that out. I respect the Brewers pitching lab almost more than any other, you know, certain specialty in Wisconsin sports. If you're talking across all major Wisconsin sports, I think the pitching lab has to be up there with the most respected. I mean, Packers quarterback gurus.
That was the only thing I could think of.
I mean, they pump out offensive linemen too. So,
thinking about how they've done with offensive linemen, I would say also.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I mean, the Bucks. I mean, they've done a pretty good job over the last couple of years, kind of getting bargains on some players and making them pretty good, in my opinion, too. I mean, Malik Beasley. I mean, he kind of cooled off during the end of the season, but they got him on a pretty good deal last year.
Yeah, and Bobby Portis has been wondrous. Say what you will about Pat Connaughton, but he helped us win a championship.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks have been pretty good at getting deals on players too. So, just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. Okay, Michael said Montas is awesome until that one inning. Every outing, it seems like he can have 4 to 5 scoreless, but 1, 3, or 4 run inning. And I mean, the one that he had in Colorado, the 3 runs that he gave up was a 3-run home run.
Yeah.
So like that's like, you know, a 1-inning example. So that's that. Okay, let's go to last night's game. The Brewers were off on Monday, so they played last night, the first of 3 in Pittsburgh. They have 3 games on the road, and then they have 3 games against the Mets at home. So let's go with last night's game, and then we'll get into some playoff stuff.
Okay, before we talk about this, we were talking about it last night after our Packer episode. I'm going to cuss, so anybody who doesn't like cussing, over your ears. Fuck the ownership for the Pirates. Fuck the GM. They're doing our man Rowdy so goddamn dirty.
They are what Brewers fans think, Mardak. Holy
that
hell.
That is straight human garbage. That is garbage.
They are who Mark Adonasio is thought to be among Brewers fans. That's what they are doing.
Yeah. The guy is 5 ABs away from 200K. Four.
He's
4 ABs away from a 200K bonus, and they're like, eh, I think you just take a seat.
Yep. We'll let you start free agency a little early.
And, you know, there was photos going around from some Brewers PR people, and they're showing photos, and they still have flags up with Rowdy Tellez's face on there. I'm like, bruh, that is so messed up.
5 games left in the season. Why are they going to start taking stuff down when there's still 5 games to go yet?
I know, but to have
you know they're only that's the only reason they did it was to save themselves $200,000.
That is insane. They deserve every bad thing that happens to them for the next 10 years.
Good luck getting a free agent that wants to sign with you.
Yeah, seriously.
Especially a veteran.
What do you think Paul Skenes thinks of that? Paul Skenes is a stud. The guy's
he's
about to
probably
hit some...
thinking, like, I'm going to be out of here as soon as my team goes up.
Yeah. And it just goes to show something that Tyler's been harping on, something that we've heard Pat Murphy talk about. The people are the biggest weapon for the Milwaukee Brewers. And it's not just talking about us, me and you. Not just talking about the fans, although it does matter. Talking about the people in the goddamn building, too.
Yep.
Because those people that run that, Matt Arnold's of the world, they're tremendous human beings. So, good by them for being good people and staying true to their word, because that is garbage, in my opinion. And I don't want to hear Pirates fans complain about nothing, because they deserve all the bad things that happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we get into the game. The Brewers had multiple 3-run innings last night, the second and the seventh inning. In the second inning, they had 7 batters. They scored 3 runs on 3 hits. Adamas stole second base after he had an infield single, making him and Churio the only teammates in Brewers history with a 20 home run, 20 stolen base season. Only duo in Brewers history to do that. And we're getting it this year. And people jump ship after a few games. Oh, by the way, the Brewers are the only team, the only one, not the Dodgers with their billion-dollar roster, not the Phillies, not the Astros, not the Yankees, nobody else has had – the Brewers are the only team without a 4-game losing streak. The only one. The only freaking one. That's crazy, dude. That's crazy how you can just jump ship after a few losses. Can you imagine being on a 4-game losing streak? Because I can't. Haven't seen it this year.
Yeah, no. Can't imagine what it's been like.
So congrats to Adamas. Good job by him making some history. Some more MLB history for Cherry to etch his name next to. The guy's just going to have his name all over MLB history by the end of the end of his career, which I hope lasts 20 years in a Brewers uniform.
Yep.
Then in the seventh inning, the Brewers had eight batters. They scored three runs, and how they scored those three runs was one hit and four walks. So the Pirates pitching staff helping out the Brewers, so good job by them. Now talking about the Brewers pitching staff, now Myers didn't particularly have the greatest day, but he didn't really have a bad day.
I think it was a tune-up game for him. That's what I wrote in my notes. This was just a tune-up.
Yeah. After the second inning, Pittsburgh had five hits, no runs, and one walk. The one walk happened by Ross in the ninth inning. So the Brewers pitching staff, they shut shit down. The Brewers got some clutch hits, padded the lead, and this was just a good old-fashioned Brewers win to get them to 90.
And you know what? Another seven runs scored without the benefit of a home run.
That's pretty sick. 17 runs without a home run.
That's love that. That's so tough. Because it's like, oh, you keep the ball in the ballpark? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Brewers can beat you on the bases with walks.
Yep.
All right. So the Brewers have two more. Like I said, two more in Pittsburgh. And then they have three against the Mets at home. I will be there on Saturday. So if anybody's going to the Brewer game on Saturday, like, let me know. I'll be there. Snow Globe Day. And then we will probably have game one next Tuesday. Game two is probably going to be next Wednesday evening. So we will probably be discussing playoff games going into next week. We'll probably have one to recap.
Yep.
Now for Patreon, there is votes for a Brewers playoff game on Patreon. So right now, the tentative plan, should the Brewers win one of the first two games on Tuesday or Wednesday, the plan is for Jake and I to do a watch party for the potential clinching game next Thursday. Mm-hmm. That is the current tentative plan. If the Brewers, say, win the first two, then we will figure out something for the NLDS.
Yep.
And we'll figure out a game for that. Should there be a chance where the Brewers lose two and we don't get a chance to do one, we'll figure out with Patreon what we're going to do for October for watch parties. So we'll figure it out. But the ideal situation is to do it for next Thursday and watch a win and see the Brewers moving on. That would be the ideal.
That would be the best.
All right. Ready to do this? Let's predict the playoff roster.
I think I'm ready.
Okay. Before we start naming names, what I want you to do is I want you to tell me how many pitchers and how many batters slash position players you have.
So I wanted to like give myself an opportunity to be as accurate as possible on this. So I looked up last year. They had 11 pitchers and 15 position players. And then I think about how different this team is this year. Uh-huh. I have 13 and 13.
Me too.
Hey, nice.
Nice.
It just felt right when I was writing him down. I was like, yeah, he's got to make it. And then he's got to make it. And then, I'm not sure about him yet.
Let's start on the position players.
Yes.
You can just give me your top 11, because I think there are 11 absolute locks as far as position players go. So just run them around and I'll check mark them off and I'll tell you which ones I also have.
All right. So this is just how I wrote them down. I was just thinking out loud one day when I was sitting down and this is how I wrote them down. So I have Churio.
Yep.
Frelich.
Yep.
Mitchell.
Yep.
Perkins.
Yep.
Those are my outfielders. Hoskins.
Yep.
Adames.
Yep.
Ortiz.
Yep.
Terang.
Yep.
Bowers.
Yep.
Contreras.
Yep.
Sanchez.
Yep.
Those are my top 11.
Okay. You have 13 and 13. Who are the other two that you have?
You can't leave Haas off there. The guy has been a freaking millennium freaking platinum bat every time he's pinch hit this year. So he's on there. And then I have Andrew Monasterio because he plays multiple positions and you need a guy like that in a pinch.
Yep, those are the 13 that I have as well.
Hell yeah, dude.
Nicely done. Hell nicely done.
All right, how about you do pitchers, and then I'll mark off if you have them.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the top six because these are starters / piggyback options.
Okay.
So I'll do it in the order we just talked about: Freddy Peralta, Frankie Montas, and Tobias Myers.
Okay, yep.
Then I also have Aaron Civale, Colin Ray, and DL Hall.
Colin Ray. Yep. Colin Ray. DL Hall. Yep.
And you got Savali.
Yep. I have Savali and Ray with like lines between, because I did like starters and then relief, and I have a line between Savali and Ray between starter and relief, because Ray's kind of been doing that already the last
couple. And same with DL Hall, like he's kind of on that like long relief slash piggyback starter role.
Yep.
Okay. Then I'm going to go from the ninth inning in to middle relief. So Devin Williams.
Yep.
Trevor McGill.
Yep.
Yoel Piamps.
Yep.
Brian Hudson.
Yep.
Aaron Ashby.
Yep.
Jared Koenig.
Yep. Say it. Say the last one. Say it.
Nick Mears.
Ooh, I have Ross.
You have Ross. Okay. Yep. I could see that too. And I originally had Hobie Milner. But I crossed off Hobie Milner and I put in Nick Mears because right now I have three lefty relievers and four righty relievers.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of lefties in the bullpen, especially with DL Hall in there. So I took Hobie Milner off and I put Nick Mears on.
Yeah, that's why I didn't put Hobie on there too, even though he's been pitching better as of late. I was like, dude, we got so many lefties, bro.
Now, I also wrote at the bottom of my notes a asterisk that I could see one of Tyler Black, Isaac Collins, or Brewer Hicklin as possible pinch runners instead of Andrew Monasterio or one of the starting pitchers.
Yeah, I can see Isaac Collins. I can see Tyler Black too. Yeah. Those both make sense to me.
Yeah.
See, did Mears get off the IL? I saw
he did a bullpen yesterday, and they're expecting him to be activated, quote, any day.
Yeah, that's what I saw yesterday too. So I was kind of like on the fence with him. So I was like, I'll go with Ross.
Could also cross that off, and could also have Bryce Wilson in there.
Bryce Wilson. Yeah, he pitched yesterday as well too. So
yep.
It's but the last spot. You know, we agree on it. Whoever it's going to be is going to be between Mears, Ross, and Bryce Wilson. Those are the three guys that are going to be fighting for one spot, in my opinion.
Right. Or could still be Hobie Milner. Wouldn't shock me if it was Hobie Milner.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
All right. So what I have here for you now, for all of the people who are worried that the Milwaukee Brewers can't win a playoff series because they haven't in the last couple of years, or that they can't win a playoff series because they've been taken out of the playoffs early the last couple of years, what I have is the 2024 Milwaukee Brewers stats as of today. So this is going to be through 157 games. Mm-hmm. So I don't have the numbers. I have the ranks of where they rank in baseball with a bunch of team statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also looked at a bunch of individual statistics for what the Brewers have individually in the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, I hope you come back when you have a chance and come back to this segment. Because the Brewers' 2024 identity is so much different.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Compared to what they've had in previous seasons. So here we go. I'm going to warn you. Some of this might shock you. So here we go. Starting with offense. This is part one of the offense, looking at the Brewers, where they rank offensively in team average, on base, slugging, OPS, home runs, walks, strikeouts, and total runs.
I just want everybody to know that this is my first time seeing this as well. Tyler did not tell me he was putting this together. So, yeah, this is interesting.
So you look at this is 2018, 2021, and 2023. This Brewers offense is leaps and bounds better.
Dude, they're 1,000 times better in slugging, OPS, base percentage, walks. I mean, strikeouts is about the same. But when you're getting on base more and then you're still hitting for more power and you're scoring more runs, I mean, what can you complain about, really?
And they're higher in walks.
Yeah,
so they're going deeper into counts, period. But yeah. You look at average, the highest out of the 4 years is 2024. On base percentage, the highest of the four is 2024. The slugging percentage, the highest of the four is 2018. Second is 2024. OPS, ninth in 2018, 10th in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Home runs, this Brewers team doesn't rely on them as much, but they're still higher than they were in 2023 and in 2021. And as we've alluded to multiple times, the Brewers have the best record without a home run.
Yep.
So that doesn't factor in super hard for me.
Yeah.
Walks. Brewers are second walks in Major League Baseball this year.
Yeah, that's wild.
They're 11th in strikeouts. They were striking out less last year, but they also were walking a little bit less. And obviously the batting average is a huge difference from last year being 23rd to being 9th this year.
Yeah.
And then runs, 2018, 12th. 2021, 12th. 2023, 17th. 2024, 5th.
Yeah, that's wild, bro.
This team is different. They are built different. They play different. And it continues with slide two of offense. So this is individually, except for the stolen bases, individually, the Brewers this season have four players above 20 home runs. That's Churio, Hoskins, Contreras, and Adames. They have eight players who have hit 10 or more home runs. This includes Christian Yelich, but it doesn't include Garrett Mitchell, who's got eight home runs in 64 games, and Eric Haas, who has five home runs in 28 games.
Five home runs in 28 games, dude.
The Brewers have two players between 50 and 69 RBI. They have two players between 70 and 84. They have one being Contreras, who is between 85 and 99, and they have one, Willie Adames, who is above 100 RBI. This year's Brewers team is third in stolen bases, with Bryce Durang leading the way with 46.
Yeah.
And the Brewers have nine players who are batting over 250 with more than 25 games played. I didn't have space to put that on here, but this is for players who have played more than 25 games. So it's not just like I'm putting guys on here who have only played like three games, but still have a high batting average.
I like it.
So 20 plus home run hitters tied with 2018. 10 plus home run hitters, eight. That's one less than last year, but they have more 20 home run hitters.
Mm-hmm.
So the closest that this parallels is the 2018 team, the team that was a game away from the World Series.
Yeah.
Looking at, oh my dude, the RBI, and this goes back to the previous slide where I mentioned that the Brewers were fifth in runs after being, 23rd last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see this with the runs batted in. If you are listening to this, take the time to pull it up and be able to look at the graphic of it, because the Brewers did not have a single player between 50 and 69 RBI or over 85 RBI last year.
That's nuts.
They had three guys in that 70 to 84 range, and I believe it was Yelich, Contreras, and Adames. Those are the three.
Probably Adames.
Then you go to 2021. They only had five players over 50, nobody over 85, except for Avi Garcia, who had 86. Avi Garcia was our leading runs batted in player in 2021 with 86.
Nice.
And then you look at even 2018, there was still four players over 50 RBI. Thanks, Kim. And then looking at stolen bases, the Brewers as a team were 11th in 2023 and 2021. They were fourth in 2018, but that was more of a team, a team thing, which this year's Brewers team is as well, to go to third in Major League Baseball, led by Bryce Durang with 46.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, 46 is a good chunk. That's mm-hmm. nothing to scoff at. That's a lot of stolen bases.
Yeah. And then again, the batters over 250 batting average. Nine is tied with 2018 for the most that they've had in some of their most previous playoff runs.
So I got to say, so far into your presentation, great job, by the way. This is really good stuff. Do not compare last year's team to this year's team because you're going to look like an idiot.
That's what I'm getting at. This team is leaps and bounds better than last year's team offensively.
Yeah, I agree.
Reggie loves it. It's seriously, it's not even close. It's not even remotely close.
Yeah.
Okay. Reggie's a fan. Let's go to pitching because this is where it does differ a little bit for this year's team compared to previous, but still not crazy. So the Brewers are fifth in team ERA, still being a top five team, and ERA is good. They were first last year, third in 2021, and fifth in 2018. The starting pitching ERA is where I get to the point of having those extra starters on the roster for the playoff series, even if they are only going to be playing three games. That's why I'm still okay with keeping extra starters to piggyback some of these guys. They kind of did some of that stuff in 2018. So the starting pitching ERA being 16th is, you know, it's not ideal, but it's not super far off from where some of these other teams were. So the Brewers starting pitching ERA this year is 410. The sixth mark from last year for starting pitching was 394.
Wow, that's really not that big of a difference.
You're talking 16 points.
Yeah.
And a 10-rank difference. For comparison, in 2018, when they were 11th, their starting pitching ERA was 392. So it was actually lower to be 11th than it was to be 6th in 2023. So these things fluctuate here.
Interesting.
So again, it's not super far off when you look at the numbers as a total versus where they're ranked.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the bullpen ERA, still elite.
And we didn't have Devin Williams for the entire year this year, by the way. So that meant we've had a lot of injuries up and down the pitching staff. So that really to be second in relief pitcher and 16th, I mean, that number 16 is lower than the amount of starting pitchers we've had this year. So that's impressive true. In its own that's right. That's
true. Yeah. So, yes, the starting pitching ERA isn't what it has been when we had a Cy Young winner and a Cy Young candidate and the best number three pitcher in baseball, which is what the 2021 numbers reflect, which is Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns. But we still have reliable pitchers, in my opinion.
I agree.
Okay, and then whip. Honestly, whip isn't like a super big stat for me just because if the Brewers are still able to convert them into outs, like I could have looked up where they rank in inducing double plays, but that would have been a tough stat to find. And that's where I brought in the opponent batting average. So the Brewers are tied for ninth. So they're still a top 10 team in opponent batting average. They were first last year, second 2021, and fifth in 2018. So these previous teams were built on pitching and defense. And I would add into the identity of 2018 that they were also built on hitting home runs.
Yeah.
So there was pitching, defense, and then 2018 was pitching, defense, and home runs.
Mm-hmm.
This Brewers team has added offense to the ways they can win. So the last thing I have is the defensive numbers. Pretty rough in 2021. But other than that, everything's on par of what you would expect. The Brewers are top five in every category.
Dude, so this team has something that those other teams didn't have, and it's grit. Those other teams had talent. I feel the grit with this team, the heart with this team, the energy that might be just induced by the young guys. I feel like that's what the major difference is, and the way that they're managed matters too, in my opinion.
And I think that they are better top to bottom.
Yeah.
As opposed to being carried by one or two or three players.
Yeah, I agree.
So if we look at this one more time, defense is pretty comparable across the board, except for 2021 when they were not great.
Mm-hmm.
Pitching, it's not terribly dissimilar. It's pretty similar across the board, even though the Brewers starters haven't been as good this year.
Yep.
But overall, still pretty similar. But when we get to the offense, the 2024 Brewers offense is so much vastly better. I cannot use enough words to describe the big difference that from this slide and this slide with the Brewers offense, how much better it is. than it was under Greg Council.
Well, then the other thing that you don't see on here is just the average team speed. The Brewers team now is just so fast, which is why they don't need the home run numbers that you see over in 2018. To your point, you said they relied a lot on home runs. Obviously, last year they didn't hit a lot of home runs. They weren't fast either. They get on base. They're second in walks. They get on base. You can go 1 through 7. You can name 7 players off the top of your head right now that are in the top, you know, plus percentage of speed in Major League Baseball. That matters, especially in the playoffs when things get a little bit tighter. They hold the ball a little bit tighter. You spike one into first base. Oh, the ball bounces off the wall. Oh, it's not second base. It's third base now with no outs.
That's the thing, is that the Brewers have all of these guys with the speed that can take an extra 90 feet.
Yeah.
You have guys that can go first to third on any hit to the outfield.
Yeah.
You can put in hit and run situations. You have guys that can score from first base easily on doubles.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's we're in a much, again, I cannot like strongly enough convey how much different this team is.
Yeah.
So the demons of this team is going to be one and done again. They could, but it's not because they've been one and done in the past. That's not why it's going to happen if it does.
Mm-hmm.
This team is different.
Agreed.
All right. Anything else you want to say on the Brewers before we move into Badgers?
I wish I could take like an emoji chef hat and put it on you right now because you just cooked, my boy.
Great job. I appreciate that. All right. Well, with that, we are going to move into Badgers football. Welcome, Mike. Welcome back. And we only have preview this week, no recap, because the Badgers were on bye last week. So, Mike, welcome in and kick us off. What are you looking for from the defense against USC?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, glad to be back here, guys. Go Brewers first off. Hell of a run. I think the most impressive stat, I think, this whole year, sorry to get off topic, is the
you're good.
The two-out scoring with how much they've scored with two outs. I think that was – I mean, there's a lot to like, right? But I just can't believe like how well they've done this whole season with scoring with two outs. I think that was such a difference maker for this whole season. So I just want to throw that out there real quick. So props to them. So going into this weekend, I mean, there's a lot of question marks of, you know, it starts with the quarterback. You know, are we going to see more young guys play? Are we going to see, you know, what else are we going to see? I think going – what I am looking forward to seeing, where I would like to see after watching the Michigan game, this defense has to create turnover somehow, man. Like, that we are lacking that so much, you know, this year, whether it's, you know, just an interception. I think the only one we've really had is that interception by Xavier Lucas game one, that interception, right? So – we're just seriously lacking, and that's in all phases, whether it's through the pass rush causing a fumble or, you know, getting an interception. So I really, really want our defense to create some turnovers. I mean, look at the Michigan game. They had a pick six, and they had one strip sack on USC, and that ended up being one hell of a difference to the game with how it ended. So, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to. I mean, as far as, you know, individuals – I've tooted my horn about this. I think Tackett Curtis needs to see the field a lot more this game and even going forward. You know, Christian Allegro, same thing. I'm hoping we get to see Xavier Lucas potentially in a few more snaps as well. And D-line, I mean, shit. As far as I'm concerned, that position right now is still open season. I know Elijah Hills has probably done the best out of everybody, but I still think that's an open competition that is really up for grabs, you know, at the end of the day. So collectively, I would like to see some turnovers going into this game because I think, you know, we get even, you know, plus two or even win the turnover battle. I think we have a shot at winning this game.
Sure. And we'll talk about this. We're not ever going to be like, oh, no, Badgers have no chance. Like, we're going to try to find the ways they could win. So that's what we're here to do. Yep. So, Jake, what are you looking for from the defense?
So I went specific and I went defensive line, right? So the thing that I was looking at is I looked at what does USC do on offense? 63.3% of the time they pass the ball, 36.7% of the time they run the ball. They average 26.3 rush attempts per game. That's 124th in the country. They pass the ball 43.3 times per game. That's number 5 in the country.
Wow.
So if you're thinking about things that the Badgers have to do, is they have to get after Miller Moss. Is that his name?
Yep.
Yeah, his name. Yep. Miller Moss. For some reason, I kept telling myself that it was Mason Miller. That just sounds like a much better name than Miller Moss. Like, you've heard of people having two first names, never a person having two last names. That's just wrong, in my opinion. But Miller Moss, that kid's actually a baller, to be honest with you. He stands tough. He got his ass beat a little bit against LSU. He stayed clean for part of it, but he was getting whooped a little bit. And then he was getting whooped a little bit against Michigan. Michigan front four was getting after USC. I was watching that game as well. The Badgers have a 6.82% sack percentage. That is number 46 in the country. I think they're going to have to up that number, be a little bit more consistent this game, get after Miller Moss. You know they're not going to try to run the ball down your throat. So let's go get after Miller and force the issue. We have the talent in the DBs in the back end of this defense. It's the front four that has to win, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that could be something. I'm just going to keep going on the vein of the pass rush. That could be where the coverage could come into effect. If the Badgers can force a coverage sack or two,
yeah, mm-hmm.
could be a big thing. And that's why I added on with covering the linebackers. I'd like to see some pass rush from the outside guys.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of who it is, whether it's Aaron Witt or if they put, you know, a Jaheim Thomas out there, or if you're looking at guys like Christian Allegro or Tackett Curtis, I know they're more traditionally middle linebacker guys, but if those guys are just getting on the field to play more snaps, which I would like to see, if they can get more snaps and remain effective like they've been through the first three games, that's what I'm looking for from the linebackers. And my last thing I need on the linebackers is I need oxygen. I need a Jake Janey legacy game.
Yeah. There's a guy that needs it.
It's so clutch.
Yeah.
All right, Jake, do you have anything special that you're watching for on special teams?
If you're Vacos, you got to make your kicks. Plain and simple with that. The thing I would say to the returners is just be confident. I mean, they don't seem like they're grabbing the ball and looking like they're going to the end zone. Now, I'm going to relate this to a Packers kick returner. That's Keyshawn Nixon. Every time that guy touches the ball, he thinks he's going to the other end of the stadium. He really believes that. I promise you, I had the ability to go ask him if he thinks he's going to go to the house, he thinks he's going to the house every single time. That's the mentality. That's the dog mentality you have to have as a kick returner. If you don't believe you're going all the way, you're not going to go all the way. Belief is half of the battle over there. You have to be confident. I don't want to see them stutter stepping, going sideways. You grab the ball, you're running through a motherfucker's face, okay? I'm talking about Marshawn Lynch, right? Yeah, there's an interview where he said, you know, there's just a mentality of running the football that when you want to run through a motherfucker face, you run through a motherfucker face. And he said, you do it again and again and again. And he kept going. He said it like 13 times in that interview. That's the mentality you have to have with a kick return. Run through somebody's face, dude. God, I'm so sick and tired of watching them stutter step. No, go straight.
David Gilroy.
That's all I got on special teams.
All right. So just keep going on the offense. You talk about the offensive line.
Yeah, so the offensive line. So, I'm going to hold one of my things till we get the key because it was so tasty. But USC is giving up 5.2 yards per rush. That is number 102 in all of college football.
Yikes.
They're giving up 164.7 rush yards per game. That is 83rd in the country.
Damn.
And this is a team that people were talking about making the playoffs. And I'm like, oh, God, they're awful on defense yet. I think they're sweeping that under the rug because they beat LSU in the opener. Ooh, congratulations. Teams are rushing 53.67% of the time. 53% of the time people are calling the run because they know they're going to get 5 yards. If you're going to get 5 yards, I call a goddamn run play.
In front of every time, yeah.
That's number 82 in the country. Now, you look at the Badger side of things, right? The Badgers are averaging 4.0 yards per rush. That's number 80. The rush game hasn't been as consistent as I would wanted it to be. Obviously, that Alabama game, you know, you get some big swings in the first couple games. They're still averaging 172.5 yards per game on the ground. That's literally more than USC's horrible run defense. People talk about the Badgers' horrible run defense. USC's is really bad.
Hmm.
The Badgers are calling 55% rush to 45% pass. Now, remember USC's 63-36. The Badgers are 55-45 run heavy, right? And that may be due to some Alabama game and some schematic things that happened in the first couple of games as well.
Honestly,
if you are the offensive line, I'm speaking directly to the front five right now. You are eating on Saturday. By the way, the state of Wisconsin is owning CBS this weekend. The Badgers are at 2:30 against USC on CBS, and then the Packers are a noon game on CBS this week. So we are owning CBS this week. The Badgers are going to go in there. They're going to be like, listen, you five are carrying us to this win. We have a bunch of talented running backs that want to eat. You guys are feeding them today. That's what's going to happen on Saturday.
Mike, how are you feeling about the run game?
I think I kind of want to just say everything that Jake just said, in my view, going into it. I was going to bring up, you know, I mean, collectively, if we're talking about the Big Ten overall, the Badgers are kind of lacking when it comes to that yards per carry, which is a hair bit over four. So it's something that we got to clean up. I would love to see a couple more, like, explosive runs, you know, perhaps this weekend. I mean, if we're getting if USC is giving up that five-plus yards a clip, I think that's just going to bring opportunity for us because, I mean, Michigan was 6.5 yards per carry this past weekend with 291 yards total, which just, you know, absolutely steamrolled them, right? And, you know, what can – you can't – like, you're going to give Braden Locke, like, just much more confidence, I think, if you can just get that run game going rather than put everything on him, right? So, I think this is definitely a run game. I think I could see this going 70-30 run if I'm honest with you. Do I want to do the run pass like type deal every single you know time we get the ball? Maybe not necessarily because I would like to see Braden maybe get a couple confident throws out there just to get him going a little bit because that Alabama game he was a little slow to start, which is understandable. But when you have 2 weeks to prep basically for a game like this, I expect us to go in there and just pound them on their front seven for sure. I expect Braden Locke to at least be, you know, coherent and ready to go for sure. I mean, USC's defense isn't anything too special. It's not Alabama's, you know, it's not even Ohio State or anything like that. It's something that I think we can definitely walk into and score points on. However, this offense has also not scored a game, has scored a 30-point game yet this season. So I think it's honestly, when I look at it, I think it's going to be a combination of kind of the old school Badgers, to be honest, chew up a lot of clock and run the shit out of the ball. I think that's going to be the story of this game, specifically against USC, because they're vulnerable to give up the run, and I don't see why we can't have 3-4 running backs at least eat every time they get the ball against these guys.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we're going to have more things on that same vein when we get into the keys and X factors, but looking at it looking at the passing game specifically, I'm still leaning towards the shorter side of see what Locke has. I'm still thinking the USC and Purdue games to see something talent wise from Braden Locke. Yeah. Now, what I can say is I could certainly see this game being similarly to how the Packers treated the Colts game.
I felt that.
And they're just going to be like, we can run the ball. You can't stop the run. And we're going to do it a bunch of different ways. And you're not going to be able to stop any of them. And I could see that being that type of game for the Badgers. Now, one other thing that I will say is looking at this, if they can put Braden Locke into some RPO situations like they were doing with Tyler Van Dyke, and if the 1A, 1B thing turns out to be true about how they were talking about Locke and Van Dyke, the thing that I had really been impressed with Tyler Van Dyke doing was his decision-making in the RPO situations. If they can do that with Braden Locke and Braden Locke can succeed in those situations, and if even he can take off on a couple scrambles, I will strongly pump the brakes on asking for Cole LeCrew or Mabry Matoyer. But I need to see it. I have to be able to see it happen. I can't be just told that in training camp in the spring that they view these guys as 1A, 1B. I have to see it. Because what I've seen so far through the first two games was that Tyler Van Dyke was understanding the offense, and as they were getting more game experience, they were getting better. and scoring more and moving the chains more. I need to see that from Braden Locke to feel confident in him.
Yeah.
So it starts with USC this week. So, Mike, coming to you, who is your X factor on Saturday?
I got, you know, the combination of the cornerbacks, basically the top three, whether that's Rico, that's Xavier, that's Forkreen, or, you know, Xavier Lucas even. You know, the reason why I say that is, I mean, USC's offense is no slouch, right? They will throw the ball. Miller Moss is going to throw it. And they got two stud receivers, Zachariah Branch, who's the 5'10 speedster. He's got 173 yards receiving this year. And then you got the big body, Jacoby Lane. You know, he's 6'4", 116 yards receiving. Those are probably their top two guys. I know I could go on here, but it's going to be interesting to see how those matchups occur. I know Forkreen's got a little bit bigger, so I'm sure he's going to start on Jacoby Lane, see how he does. And Rico might start off on Branch. Otherwise, Max Lofi, I think, being the slot corner, could end up being on him too. But, you know, like I said, USC is going to want to throw the ball for sure. The secondary is going to get tested again this weekend in some capacity. So, and I still think being the strength of this defense, I really, really would like the defense, the secondary to get that turnover that I was talking about earlier. So, you know, that's going to be my X factor, I would say, going in this weekend.
Throw two guys out there. This is almost even beyond X factor, but like dark horse guys on that secondary part of it. If Austin Brown or Preston Zachman can just come up with like one of those random interceptions, like they're both going to have like two, but if they can put one of them in this game, that would be huge.
I agree. That's a good call out.
Jake, who's your X factor?
My X factor is not a person, but it's a mentality.
Mm.
And I need everybody to be aggressive in every single thing that you do. You guys heard me get fired up when I was talking about returning a kick. I need people to have that fire when they block. I need people to have that fire when they run. When you run a route, when you're in your cadence, Braden Locke, I need you to show aggressiveness and fire. Now, the reason that everybody's fallen in love with this 2024 Brewers team, as Tyler was breaking down some beautiful numbers before, if you missed it, go back to the 42-minute mark to watch that entire segment. But the reason that we fell in love with them is because they show heart and grit. And that's something that this Badgers team has not had the last couple of years. They haven't had the heart and the grit. They haven't had a guy that fires them up, which is why I got so excited when Tekka Curtis got into the game a couple weeks ago, because he was actually somebody playing with emotion. I was like, God damn, I forgot what that looked like in Cardinal and White. That's crazy that I forgot what that looked like. And it wasn't just after a big play. It was every single snap. He was running like it was his last time he was going to run to tackle somebody. I need that. And Fickell, we look at you, man. You're a good motivator. We need that shit today. We need your A game today. Phil Longo better cook on Saturday. I need a mentality of aggressiveness. Starting at 1:30, not 2:30. You get that shit fired up an hour early. You get ready to run. Let's go.
So I went basic. I'll be honest with you. I went basic and I went with Chesma Lucy. Now, Michigan, like Mike already mentioned, they ran 46 times for 290 yards.
Yeah.
Their lead running back, Khalil Mullings, ran 17 times for 159 yards. That's like 9 yards a carry.
Dude, his last run.
If Wisconsin can run effectively and take care of the football, which is where Chesma Lucy name specifically comes in, if they can run effective and take care of the football, they have a shot to win this football game.
Yes.
But those things have to happen.
Yes.
Mike, what's your key?
Well, kind of what he I'll go defense. I touched on it before. I mean, I'm going to go back to Miller Moss stat line here because he's definitely no slouch. So three out of the four Miller Moss's starts, they have been against ranked teams, none of which have been at home. So I look at that, and it's like, God damn, imagine what he can do maybe in the L.A. Coliseum, right? So I honestly think it's kind of in combination with my X factor, too, on our defense, because secondary is going to get tested. But God damn, we got to find a way just to get turnovers, man. I know I mentioned it before, but I think that's the key to this game. You know, because our secondary, like I said, is a strength. I expected more. Quite frankly, so far, you know, three to four games in, I would say, as a defense. So I just really, 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 I think a key to the game is we got to win the turnover battle against these guys in order to win this game. Ultimately, it can't be 0-0. It can't be 0-2 or 0-1. We have to win the turnover battle against these guys without a doubt. And I think we can because they're not perfect. There's definitely some vulnerability on that offense too, even though they're very, very talented. But, you know, I just want to see like attack and Curtis just fucking go on a blitz and just strip sack Miller Moss or, you know, get Rico his first interception of the year. Something like that, you know, just get the vibes up on that defense because it's something that we're lacking right now all around. And this is a perfect opportunity, especially when you got, you know, Brandon Locke coming in for his first start of the year. That can only help the offense too in the long run as well. So, you know, let's create them turnovers this weekend.
Just staying consistent. Staying consistent on the turnovers. So.
Yeah, no, because it's something that we're lacking this year. It really is, if we're going to be honest. So, you know, I mean, I'll give you one more stat. So, Michigan, they pressured Miller Moss 43% of the time on his dropbacks. And that led to, you know, then two turnovers that I was talking about. So, if we can generate that pressure, if we can, you know, find a way to do that, and like there's no question in my mind that we can not only win this game, and win over that turnover battle that we are seriously lacking. So that's what I'm going with.
I'm going to call my shot on Preston Zachman getting an interception.
I like it.
Need him. What's your key?
So let me be the first to welcome USC to the Big Ten. You have to stop the fucking run in this conference. Just go ask Nebraska about, 12 years ago? You have to stop the goddamn run. This ain't no cute shit over here. This is grown man football, okay? There's a reason that so many players from the front seven, specifically from Big Ten teams, are dominant in the NFL. Because this is how we're bred over here. We are men. We
get our offensive linemen in there, too, on the other side of the ball.
Agreed. We have to run the ball between the tackles. 90% of Michigan's runs came between the tackles.
Damn.
We have heard numerous times just in this little podcast here about how many rushing yards, their average, the attempts that Michigan had last week. 90% of that was between the tackles. So they said, listen, we're going to line up right here. We're going to run the ball right here, and you ain't going to do shit about it. That is Wisconsin football to a T. Literally, their weakness is our biggest strength historically, right? So this is a bit, really, in my opinion, if I had a little bit of extra money to throw around, I'd be throwing some shit down on the line because USC is favored by 15.5 points. I'd be throwing hundreds of dollars down on that because Wisconsin's going to run the damn ball between the tackles. They're going to keep this game close. Even if they get an L, they're going to be keeping this game close just because of the style of play. Run the ball between the tackles. Welcome USC to the Big Ten, make them 0-2 in the conference, and prove that they don't know how to stop the run.
So on the conference loss that they suffered to Michigan, I'm going to take a play out of Michigan's playbook, and it's not necessarily strictly out of the playbook, but just out of emulating what they did. And the key to me is balanced scoring.
Yeah.
Michigan scored 7 points in the first quarter, 7 points in the second quarter, 6 points in the third quarter, and 7 points in the fourth quarter. That type of balance is one of those things where, like, you don't let USC build a 10-0 lead, or you don't score a touchdown on your opening drive and pull a Tennessee Titans and not score a touchdown until late in the game.
Yeah, right.
So keeping that in balance, not making it feel like USC has built up confidence that, oh, they jumped out to a big lead, and now the Badgers are scoring, you know, 14 points in garbage time. Like, be consistent and balanced with your scoring. And to the point of sustained drives, if you can just have 1 6.5-minute drive per quarter where you're coming away with ideally touchdowns, again, that's just another one of those things where we're talking the formula of how Wisconsin can win. That's how they can do it.
Yep.
All right, Mike, two score predictions, one from the head, one from the heart. Give me your score prediction from the head.
So from the head, based off of what I've seen this year, I got to go 20-27 USC. Based off of – this is the eye test. Based off of what I have seen so far this year, I just think, number one, we're not nothing has given me that much confidence yet that we're going to score over 20 just overall. That's just what I've seen so far this year. And then number two, USC can score at the end of the day. So that's why I went 20-27. I do think we definitely cover in this game. But yeah, that's what I'm going with.
So I have 24-13 USC, and it's still just for me. I need to see something from Braden Locke. I would happily be wrong on this, but from what I've seen from Braden Locke so far, I don't have, like Mike said, the overarching confidence that I'm going to be shocked by what I see. So I would like to see something, and I would happily be wrong on this, on only having 13 points for the Badgers. So, Jake, what's your score prediction from the head?
This hurt, but I have 20-17 USC.
Close game. Doesn't make sense.
It's going to be close no matter what, in my opinion.
Okay. Mike, give me your score prediction from the heart.
The only reason why I'm doing it this way is because I did pick them to win at the beginning of the season. So I got 27-24 win. I think we have the opportunity. I think it's going to, like what I kind of reiterated earlier, I think it's we're going to have to chew up some clock, and we're going to have to run the shit out of the ball in order to win this. And Braden Locke's got to make those casual, you know, maybe 10 to 15 yard pass plays. Kind of similar to how like a Scott Tolzien was when he was playing for the Badgers, run heavy and make those occasional big time throws.
I feel like Hornibrook was kind of like that too.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how Malik Willis was on Sunday. He made like four throws.
That, you know what? That's actually a good, decent comparison, actually. But I don't see Braden Locke running for 73 yards, but still.
Why do you think I said we need a dual threat?
Yeah.
You literally hit like four passes, and then you use his legs as a weapon, dude. He would a dual throw would be filthy in this offense, dude.
Yeah. So yeah, I will go with a win with my heart on this one. That was more so because I picked him. But yeah, I mean it's not like we can't do it. So we definitely can. We just need stuff to click. So
and that's what it is. That's why we do the two different ones. We do the optimistic, you know, everything goes right, the ideal scenario. And in that scenario, keeping with my point on balanced scoring, if the Badgers can score two touchdowns and finish three drives with field goals and score 23 points, I think the Badgers could win 23-21.
Oh, I like it. So I have defense showing out a little bit in mine. I mean, I flipped the 17, so they score 17 and we score 23 in this one. So I have 23-17 Wisconsin. They control the clock. We've all kind of been talking about it. The offensive line is going to have to feast this week. So hopefully the defense is ready and hopefully the O-line is ready.
All right. So I didn't tell you guys that I had this, but Adam Gorney for Rivals wrote an article this week about college coaches in their second year of coaching. Mike's nodding, so I'm assuming he's read it so far. But looking at it, some of the second-year college coaches that have gone on to build very successful programs like Texas, Steve Sarkisian started 13-12. At Texas. Eli Drinkwitz started at Missouri 11-12. They are a top 10 team in the country right now. Dabo Swinney started 15-12. James Franklin at Penn State started 14-12. Mario Cristobal at Miami started 13-13. Nick Saban started 7-6. Pete Carroll started 6-6. Joe Paterno started 5-5. Kirby Smart started 8-5. Second year coaches currently in college football are 92-96 overall.
Yep.
And four of them have winning records. You want to guess who they are? If you can guess any of them, I'd be impressed. You're going to get one of them, obviously.
Well, Fickle's one.
Fickle is one of them.
Tell me a conference. Give me a clue. Give me something.
There's another one in the Big Ten.
Second year coach, Big Ten.
Well, Indiana, that Cignetti's on his first year.
That's not Indiana. Nope.
Yeah. Not Northwestern. Michigan, Northwestern. Not Northwestern. Shit.
It is Northwestern.
Yeah, Northwestern. Yeah.
David Brown or Northwestern. Yeah. Yeah, there's one that is in the ACC, and there is actually both of these two are in the ACC.
It's not Duke.
Nope.
Virginia Tech. Georgia Tech?
Georgia Tech is one.
That's a good one. That's a freaking great pull, Mike. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Who the hell thinks Georgia Tech? That's a good one.
Shit. It's not Cal, is it?
It's not Cal. It's another red team.
SMU.
Got it.
No.
Louisville?
It is Louisville.
Louisville.
Jeez. Nice. I hate that Cal is in the freaking ACC. That just sounds so wrong.
Yeah.
The Atlantic Coastal Conference all the way by the Pacific Ocean.
So yeah, that's where we're at. And Stanford. Four of them have winning records, and one of them being Luke Fickell has not had consistent quarterback play at all.
Well, so, that made me feel better.
Yeah, and it only rainbows and sunshine around here, bud.
Yeah,
like always.
All right, so let's see what the Badgers can do against USC on Saturday. We appreciate people hanging out, listening, or watching the entire time. Appreciate it in comments as well. We'll be back next Wednesday. Go Brewers. We'll have more Brewers next week. We'll have the Badgers recap and the preview again for Purdue. And other than that, Jake and I will see you again on Tuesday for our Packers recap again. And until then, go Packers, go Bucks, go Brewers, go Badgers, go everything else in Wisconsin. And we will see you guys next Tuesday and Wednesday.
Like and share the show.
Later, fellas.